From in the beginning to the musical apocalypse, this is The Bible Says What. I'm your host, Mike Wiseman. Jeremiah 33:3, call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. As a Christian, I remember begging Yahweh to reveal himself to me. Goosebumps are all I was rewarded with for years of obedience and belief. 2 Chronicles 14:9, if you seek him, he will be found by you. False! Why does the Christian deity ignore those that are openly seeking him, those that have asked for him to show himself, to reveal his almighty power and love? These verses, like countless others before them and after them, ignore all the times the concept put forth fails to work. Unfortunately, the believer at the point of failure to hear or see the proof or answer to their prayer will oftentimes find fault instead with themselves or the person that is unable to connect with their invisible mute deity. Most Christians will make excuses for their deity's silence. They will oftentimes blame those who have not made a connection to Yahweh, his ghost, or his son for not trying hard enough, or sin, or the devil, or homosexuality, or the government. Anything to justify their deity's choice to stay hidden, to ignore those asking for his assistance and presence. I recently read a tweet claiming that Yahweh is everywhere watching. What a disgusting thought! What about the child being raped and abused, and what is too often mistakenly thought of as a safe place, Yahweh's own house? If the Christian deity can't even bother to stop the rape of a child in his own house, why would he even bother to take the time to reveal himself to me? And if he decided to come down and say hello, you better believe I'm going to be demanding some answers as to why he chose to show up for me and simply stand by and watch as countless children get abused in his own home. The Christian deity will help some lady at church get a good parking spot at the overpriced grocery store she shops at, but refuses to protect children in his own house. The deity most Christians think they are worshiping is personal and has no connection to reality or common sense. They will defend their personal Jesus, no matter how much of a monster simple logic paints him to be. Let's start the show.
Is there anything in the Bible that you yourself have an issue with? Okay, so it took you reading the Bible to realize that those things were bad for you?
Yeah, it actually did.
I couldn't figure this out on your own?
No, Ted Bundy could be redeemed. God doesn't kill children.
What do you think the Passover was? Yahweh sets up a whole system in the Old Testament where you slaughter animals just so he's able to forgive you.
Today's special guest writes for the Baptist News Global and is the founder of Provoke Wonder. Welcome to the show, Rick Pidcock.
Thanks for having me.
I found you through searching for articles for a segment I'm doing called The Pastor Says What. And I just happened to pick your article out at random. And then as soon as I got done recording that conversation with my buddy Don from the Godless Heathens, you followed me on Twitter. And I was like, this is amazing. I'm going to reach out to this guy. Great timing.
It's almost like the sovereignty of God was controlling everything behind the scenes.
Right. Almost. Not quite, though.
You ready for the sinner's prayer?
What's that? You want to do that first?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Some people like to start off with a prayer and all that.
Yeah. No, my background would save that to the end for the invitation.
Well, so tell us a little bit about the Provoke Wonder. What is that?
It sounds a little more fancy than it actually is. It's basically me and my wife. I wrote a children's book, and my wife did the design for it, the illustrations and stuff, and then I came out with an album last year. So I kind of had these dreams of like bringing artists together and stuff to do some things, and then COVID hit and my theology continued to evolve over time. So it's what is on the Baptist News Global website as far as my handle or my bio, but it's nothing too huge.
Yeah. Roger. Well, so You wrote an album, or you produced an album, or you sing? Yeah. What's going on with that?
Yes, I produced an album. My artist name is Provoke Wonder, and the album is called Consider the Stars. And that one was coming out of, like, I grew up a very young earth creationist, you know, and all that. And then eventually ended up accepting everything that, you know, modern science tells us, and started wondering, okay, like, do I now become, like, what do I become? Do I become an atheist? Do I, you know, whatever. And so that album was kind of like my wrestling through, trying to see the science of what our universe actually is, and then trying to wrestle through, like, spiritual significance and the human journey in light of that. So
interesting. How'd you come out of that? What'd you do? What'd you decide?
What did I decide? Well, basically where I've come to is, like, the story of the universe is evolution. And wherever I find myself on the religious, in the religious conversation, I'm going, it needs to be set within the context of evolution. And, and so I can, interact with, you know, I'm coming from the Christian world. So a lot of my conversation, it's in my DNA, and that's part of evolution too. You know, you carry within your body the traits of what came before, and yet you've transcended it too. And so a lot of my conversation is going to be in that Christian world, but I'm also, you know, look, I've got atheist friends. I'm looking into, like, Buddhism, even Islam, you know, not like I'm thinking about becoming a Buddhist or a Muslim or whatever. It's just, I feel the total freedom of curiosity to see what's out there. So
well, that's good. Yeah. Question everything, man.
Yeah, exactly.
X-Files.
Yeah.
Truth is out there for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to dive into that article. It's entitled How John MacArthur Loves the Bible But Not His Neighbor. Great article. Why did you write it?
For one, I was really annoyed at John MacArthur. Quite honestly, I used to love John MacArthur. In fact, actually growing up, this is kind of funny. John MacArthur was too liberal. For me growing up, like, I went to Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina, and John MacArthur was, like, you know, a threat to them, basically, and because he was attracting people from Bob Jones but was considered too liberal and a compromiser and stuff, if you can imagine. So a lot of my contacts really like him, and then you know, when he started using the theology of hell to justify putting his neighbors in harm's way, that just really, it really bothered me. It made me angry, and I think justifiably so. And, you know, that's like, I didn't really get into it in the article, but my theology was very much that, and it disconnected me from my humanity. And I wanted to begin a conversation of pointing out how some of these, theological things that Christians just assume can cut us off from who we are and our neighbors, and can really cause a lot of harm. So
that was definitely one aspect I thought was very interesting of the article. You had mentioned that Jesus' number one thing was love your neighbor, and that is very important to you. And I also find it important to benefit our neighbors as well. We all should work together. I totally agree with that. Kumbaya, all that shit. Definitely. But what John here has done is he put his neighbor in danger. And what you've alluded to in the article here is the neighbor who watches his neighbor go to hell, essentially. And knowing that person's going to go to hell, you lose your humanity. And I see that. I can see that. And that was very interesting to me. But what you did at the end there is you said it contradicts, that Jesus was the saying that was the most important thing. But what you forgot is it contradicts the end where Jesus comes back. And this is where we're going to go with this, because it's inevitable. When Jesus comes back to throw everybody in hell.
Yeah,
that kind of contradicts that loving part where Jesus says, love your neighbor, but I'm going to come back and throw them in hell. That's going to be me and my angel army. So, inevitable, what is hell to you?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, like, the short answer is I don't know. I don't have an apologetic where I'm going to come on here and try to defend like what I believe is the view of hell. And I'm not going to apologize for Jesus either. If he's saying, if, you know, there's stuff in there, you know, about that, that, I think cuts me off from myself and my neighbor. You know, I mean, I could get into, there are different, you know, I'm sure you've heard it, you know, people, there are different ways people view hell. Some of them is, you know, it's a purifying thing. Some of it is a retributive thing. I have no idea what happens, you know, the moment your breath stops, if you go to a place, like that, or if you just cease to be, you know, so I think it would be speculation on my part, to be too dogmatic about what is hell.
Interesting. So let's take Matthew 13:41.
Yeah.
For instance, Son of Man will send out his angels and they will weed out his kingdom. Everything that causes sin and all who do evil, they will throw them into the fiery furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. See, I take all of these concepts they're throwing out there of fire and a lake of fire and sulfur and all of this other things. I'm thinking volcano, man. That's where I'm going.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Hell's like a volcano land. So that's what the Bible is describing. So do you not believe it to be that for another reason? I don't understand. Cause like it clearly says it's a place of fire.
Oh yeah. It clearly says it's a place of fire, brimstone. It also says outer darkness, weeping and gnashing of teeth, you know, you know, there's all kinds of, I mean, it even talks about like you can get into Revelation and you've got the big giant locust insect creatures who can like eat on your flesh, but somehow not kill you, you know? And I mean, it's
terrifying.
Their
sting because they had stingers. Yeah. And the stingers would torment you for years. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder, and it's like now it's like, okay, well you got Elon Musk talking about going to Mars. Like, okay, does the tribulation happen on Mars too? You can have insect creatures there, you know, and on the Earth, like how does that work? So I don't know. I mean, in the first century, there was a genre of literature and of preaching called apocalyptic literature and apocalyptic prophets, and they would use a lot of this imagery to make some kind of point. You know, and
fear-based.
Oftentimes, I think yeah, it's fear based, and I think that Jesus was clearly an apocalyptic prophet.
Yeah,
I would take issue with the way those things were communicated. I would never communicate that to today. I mean, people don't. I was going to say people don't take apocalyptic prophecy that seriously today as a literature or as a genre, but unfortunately they do. And
yeah,
that's what we see in evangelicalism. So,
and why don't you take it seriously?
For one, it was. I mean, I could give you like an intellectual answer and say it was culturally situated in that time. And there were things that Jesus predicted that really bother me as far as like it sounded like he thought it was all about to end and then it didn't, you know.
Right,
and
right.
Again, we could get into like intellectual stuff with that. But really for me, what it comes down to is I was absolutely certain of everything. And then I went through I went to a worship school because I've led worship for over 20 years, 10,000 Fathers Worship School. And on the first night, Aaron Keyes, who you've had on your podcast, he said to us that we needed to have God awareness and self-awareness. And I figured, okay, my God awareness is totally fine. I don't really have any questions there. I'd never even thought about my self-awareness. And so that night, they ended up given us this exercise that we went through, and we listed like the like 10 most like high points of our lives and 10 low points, hard times of our lives, and we had to begin to like process through these things and look at the story of our lives, and really like when I started looking at that on paper, the things that I grew up in evangelicalism and the abuse that I struggled through and had to survive, like I had no idea how hurt I was, and I just broke down crying. And basically over the next year, my journey with 10,000 Fathers was processing those wounds. And then as I began to grow in my self-awareness, all of a sudden my God awareness began to get really shaky. because I began to see how my theology was wounding me and how my theology of fear was cutting me off from myself, was cutting me off from my neighbor, and was really, it was a fantasy land that it was connecting me with God, because really I always had to hold God in an arm's length. You can never really trust a God who might set your kid on fire.
Well, yeah. You know? Or starve them to death, or drown them, or, you know, all these things the Bible says that Yahweh's done.
Yeah. Or that commands commands you to chop your wife's hand off and show her no pity because she grabbed the guy by the genitals was attacking you.
These are perfect laws, by the way. You know, that's what it says.
Oh, yeah. It's the righteous standard of Jesus that, you know, Jesus earned righteousness for us by obeying. Like, how many women in Bethlehem or Nazareth was Jesus, like, calling for to have their hands chopped off? Like, evangelicals need to come to terms with this.
Well, there's spots in there where Jesus says to obey the law, Matthew 5:18. So, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're going to follow the words of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus, wouldn't you want to follow them thoroughly and efficiently to the end?
Yeah, I mean, it draws logically. If Jesus wanted to uphold the law and wanted to uphold it perfectly, and the law says to chop your wife's hand off, then Jesus would have been laying in bed hearing the screams of women throughout the city while their hands fell to the floor, and he was getting excited about it because he was being glorified.
Well, like, worse yet, the stoning of disobedient children. You know, these poor kids who just say something bad about their parents. Take them out back. Stone them to death. You know, Jesus even scolded them for not, you know, stoning kids to death.
And one of those in Deuteronomy 22, it's like, okay, you get this girl who it's her wedding night and she's with some ancient Near Eastern dude. And if she's not pleasing enough sexually to him, then he can accuse her of, you know, not being a virgin. And then if she doesn't have proof before the elders of the city of her virginity, then she gets stoned. And I'm like, you know, and I hear a lot of, like, you know, you've probably heard this on your podcast. A lot of people will say, well, you got to interpret those passages in light of Jesus, or you've got to, like, look at what the scholars have said. You know, there's scholars have dealt with this and they have come up with perfectly reasonable explanations. And I'm like, well, when I look at that stuff, I feel like when I read those scholars dealing with that, like, I feel like I'm reading people in the bargaining stage of the five stages of grief.
Yeah.
And it cuts you off from your humanity. Once you have to justify, like, I get in debates with people on Facebook or Twitter, mostly Facebook, because that's where my family and friends follow me and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll have people, like, defending chopping your wife's hand off and showing her no mercy. I had a guy who was like, well, she shouldn't have reached below the belt.
Yeah.
I'm like your humanity is now cut off because you're defending chopping a woman's freaking hand off.
Well, I mean, but their Bible says so. I'm very curious. I love this conversation so far. But what is the Bible to you?
It's part of the conversation. As the story of evolution of humanity, and of which I am personally a part of. You know, it's like, you know, what is the Bible to you? Like, you know, you have this podcast and as far as I know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're only interviewing Christian preachers. And it makes sense because, I mean, that's where our society is. It's where it's come from. I think the Bible is a very big source of disconnection for evangelicals from their humanity because they have taken it as basically as like God. For one, they feel the need to defend it.
Well, I mean, in 2 Timothy 3:16, all scripture is Yahweh breathed and useful for preaching, teaching, correct. I mean, this is what it's for. This is Yahweh's message to the world. It's what it says anyways. So, I mean, if you take it literally, then So I'm very confused. And what do you take all of it that way? Or do you just,
So take the 2 Timothy 3:16 thing. And I don't have a Bible in front of me, so all of this is just going to be off the top of my head stuff, but like, so, you know, there's a difference between like form and function. I feel like the 2 Timothy 3:16 is about, it's saying that And again, I'm not defending the Bible here. I'm just explaining how I would see this. So like, it would say that the scripture is profitable for, and then it's like all these functionary roles, for helping you become a more mature person, basically. And
it's a self-help book.
Yeah, it's basically a self-help book towards some biblical vision of humanity, whatever that means. But what evangelicals have done is they then take the form of scripture and they literalize everything, and then they have to like defend it. And if like the earth is not 6,000 years old, and if there wasn't a global flood, and if there's one contradiction, then it has like no use to us. And what I'm saying is like, I can value the Bible as in the form part, in the function part of the conversation as part of a greater evolution of humanity.
What about a history book that shows the evolution of humanity? What about a science book that shows the evolution of humanity? And it doesn't have anything about slavery, chopping off women's hands, or stoning children to death. What would be better?
I would also value those. Yeah, I would value those as well.
Well, I'm curious why you value the one that's so horrific and has been used for by monsters to do monstrous things throughout history. There's other books out there. And I'm very curious why this one.
Because, like, when you think about evolution, like, a dinosaur doesn't just become an elephant. Like, it happens slowly over time. It becomes eventually other species and stuff. And you just can't deny the Bible's impact on our culture, on our conversation, on our entire way of viewing things.
That doesn't make it a good thing, though, just because it's impacted us. Yeah.
No. And so I'm not defending the Bible as, like, this authoritative, you know, jumping off constitution, inerrant constitution, you know. But what I'm saying is that it is an inevitable part of the conversation that we need to deal with because we've been so wounded by it, because so many of our wonders are wrapped up in it. I mean, it's done more than just damage. Like it's done damage, but it's also like you look at a lot of like African American.
I can say the same thing for like the Twilight series, man. It's done damage, but I mean, vampires are cool, but wow, sparkling? There's a lot of problems there. We've got a lot of issues with this thing. So guess what? I'm going to throw it out as my vampire lore. I'm going to go back to other things, you know? What is that, 29 Nights or...
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was awful.
But I mean, I can't, you know what I'm saying? The Bible to me is Twilight. I can't get behind it. There's just too much wrong with it.
Resist talking about it.
Well, again, it's part of the culture. You're right. It is part of the culture, but I'm going to throw it out, man. It's to me, it's terrible. So,
but what does that mean to throw it out for you?
Well, I'm not going to go to it for my vampire lore. What do vampires do? Yeah. Do they sparkle? No, they don't. No. That was a mistake. Yeah. I don't know what that guy was thinking, you know, something like that. So, but you still include this into your lore, and I love the word apologize for Jesus. That to me, that's amazing. So you believe that Jesus followed the Old Testament laws and promoted them, correct?
Yeah, I mean, again, I would be getting into speculation if I talked about specific things that an actual historical Jesus did within his particular life. I think
speculation. Yeah.
You know, again, I can't prove any of that. I can't prove it did happen. I can't prove it didn't happen. I can't prove that the Gospels say different things about Jesus, different things about what he said. I can't prove which one he actually said.
Right.
So that would be a lot of speculation for me.
So inevitably, where does your deity come from? Where does Jesus come from? Where does your idea, this concept come from?
Mm-hmm. So, and again, I would preface this with, I don't know. But like when I look at the, story of the cosmos, like you can't divorce cosmology. You can't divorce theology from cosmology.
Why?
And, because when the major religions developed, like they were so cosmological, you know, there was a three-tiered universe of the heavens and the flat earth and the underworld, and the gods, you know, were up in the heavens and they would come down and, you know, and you look at like the Bible in particular, you know, it's not just Genesis 1. Like, it's even in the Gospels.
Yeah,
you
see four corners of the earth.
In Philippians, you know, this three-tiered cosmos. And so much of the theology is set in that. It was a hierarchical world, and so their theology was hierarchical. And so we don't live in a hierarchical cosmos anymore. We live in a totally different cosmos. When Copernicus showed that the earth is not the center of the cosmos, you know, the church panicked because they realized that, according to the church's theology, the earth was the center of the cosmos because man was the center of the earth and God is imaged in man. And so when you decenter the earth, you're decentering man, and ultimately you're decentering God from their hierarchical cosmos. And their entire power structure was based on hierarchy. So we don't live in that world anymore. We live in an evolving, converging, transcending universe. And so I think that our theology ultimately needs to fundamentally change from that hierarchical view to more of an evolutionary, converging, transcending view. And so, you know, I think of, like, the universe as like this. It's whatever is really going on here. It's so far more ancient and more infinite than anything I could ever imagine. And so I'm interacting with that.
Well, why do you insert a magical being? Why does there need to be a magical being? Invisible magical being.
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I'm right now, and again, I'm right now where I'm at. I am moving into this evolutionary, converging, transcending universe, and I'm transitioning. I'm evolving from this hierarchical Christian world into that, and I'm in a society that is dominantly hierarchical Christian, and I'm trying to be honest and true to my own, like, what excites me, true to honest about what has hurt me. But I can't pretend like I'm not intrigued and interested with the story of my life, which includes the Christian window into what is really going on. And there's a lot of crap that needs to be knocked out of this.
So do you think that Yahweh created the universe via his spoken words?
I have no idea. Yeah.
Well, that's a good answer. I mean,
I mean, it happened from singularity to the Big Bang, you know, and then particles began to draw together and bond in order to, and then transcended to become atoms. And then those atoms, you know, began to bond, to transcend, to become, you know, molecules, and the universe evolved in greater complexity.
Going deeper than I know, man.
there's something going on there. You know, it's continually converging. It's coming together and it's transcending into something greater. And where I kind of see the religious conversation right now is the religions of the world have been so, like, separated. And right now, especially with technology, like, there's a converging that is going on. There's a converging conversation that is going on. You know,
what do you mean, converging conversation?
Like, there, especially in more like the progressive Christian circles, there are Christians who are beginning to listen to Buddhists. There are, especially like it. You'll see it in like some of the Christian mystics, like Thomas Merton, or looking back through the, like, through the medieval centuries of, like, Meister Eckhart, like, these are people who, these mystics, they saw the universe as relationality, and they didn't know about modern science, and yet they still saw, you know, St. Francis talked about, like, brother sun, sister moon, like, they had this language of relationality in the earth. And I think what modern science is doing for us now is it's showing us, yes, everything is related. Everything is it is coming together, whether you like it or not. And when things come together, they have a greater consciousness. Like, on the earth right now, technology is bringing people from all over the planet together. And, you know, my son is playing video games with people from China, with people from the UK, and he's realizing that not everybody had to choose between Trump or Biden. You know, imagine that. And so like that, I think that's what's going on religiously right now is Christians are seeing, oh, we got a lot of dumb stuff in our religion right now. But, and these Buddhists are saying some stuff that like resonate with me.
Interesting.
And so, you know,
Yeah, what so I'm seeing here is a gap that needs filled. And the gap is, I don't know. And what you've done with that, yeah, what you've done with that, I don't know, is you've put a God there.
What God?
Your God. The God that you've, this, I don't know what God, that's a great question. Can we describe your God?
I would say I've put a curiosity there. And then the I don't know, I'm not, well, when I said I don't know as far as like, did Yahweh say a word and the universe started? Like, I'm not, there's an I don't know there, and I'm not really interested in that.
Did your specific deity create the universe?
I don't know. I don't have
a... I love it. Yeah, I'm very curious about this deity, man. Who is he? What does he do?
So what I'm saying is my deity, my understand. I would say at least there's the universe, and the universe is far more ancient and infinite than anything I can imagine.
So the universe is the character?
There seems to be. Say what?
So you. Sorry, I'm just trying to help it out a little bit. Is the universe the God?
So I'm saying I can at least see that. Now, what's happening in the universe is this story of things, elements coming together and transcending. And ultimately, you end up with conscious life. Like, there's a movement here. And so what I'm saying is I would think of if there's a God, I would see God as like some kind of infinite forward moving power to the universe. And that is very different than Old Testament Yahweh commanding you to chop your wife's hand off because he got really ticked off that she, you know, reached below the belt.
Or if your kid said something bad, so you gotta throw rocks at him until he dies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's so horrible. I mean, so horrible.
So, I mean, my Christian friends would say, well, that's a totally different religion.
Yeah, of course they would. You know, it's an excuse. I mean, you have to come up with an excuse. Your loving deity just, you know, called for disobedient kids to be thrown rocks at until they die. I mean, you have to come up with an excuse for that one. I mean, you can't just sit with that. But you said, so your God is the forward moving power in the universe. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes.
Okay. What else is he? Because I'm very, you worship this guy. You went to a whole school, worship school. And
well, I'm actually in seminary right now.
See?
Getting a degree in worship, which is kind of funny.
Worship a forward moving power or an actual person?
Or well, that's, deity, see, that's an another entity. Thing. I would deconstruct the concept of worship, and that's where I'm at right now. Like, to me, worship is primarily a hierarchical concept, based on honor and wrath, and you have to give glory and honor to the people and the beings higher up on the hierarchy, and the ultimate high
Why?
One is God. Well, that's just the way. That's the world in which the Bible was written. That's
right. But well, you specifically, I want to know why you worship, and what do you worship? It's a forward-moving power.
Yeah. So what I think we need to do is move beyond this language of worship and ultimately get into a language of love. And so I am learning to love myself, and I'm learning to love my neighbor. And if there is an infinite God. That is around, whatever that means, or in all of this, then I believe, I would have to say this is by faith, I would believe that God would be in favor of loving yourself and loving your neighbor. And if not, then I'm just not interested in having that any kind of relationship with that God.
Oh, so now you have a relationship with it. We're going too fast here. Slow down. Worship. Yeah. You sing songs. Do you sing songs to this deity? I don't even know how to describe him. You don't sing songs to him?
I don't go to church anymore. So
okay. So what do you do with the worship school? You just learn about how to better yourself or you know, think about yourself?
That was a few years ago that I went through the worship school, but right now I'm getting a master's degree in worship, but
right.
I'm just taking theology classes and stuff like that. So it's not like I have to sing songs for class or anything.
It's a worship. It's very confusing on how that works. All this theology stuff.
Imagine me. I'm getting a degree in worship, and then I'm saying that we need to fundamentally move away from worship.
Right, and you don't worship it.
I mean, it interests me. It's so confusing. I cannot deny the curiosity that I have for theology and for the conversation. So that's what I want to do with where I'm at right now in my life. I'm ready to graduate. So
awesome.
Well, I'm not going to make an apologetic out of it and run an invitation for you. So,
well, I still don't get it, man. It doesn't make any sense to me. You mentioned you have a relationship with this forward moving power. How does that work?
I'm trying to remember the context in which I said I have a relationship with the forward moving power.
Well, the forward moving power is what you believe exists, and you don't worship it. You don't sing songs to it, but you do have a relationship with it, you said.
I would say, I would say that what I was saying is, if there is a God out there and that God is like upset that I'm content to love myself and my neighbors in healthy ways, that I'm not interested in having a relationship with that God.
Right. So you do have a relationship with your God, so correct?
I would say I would say that I am loving myself and loving my neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there is a God who maybe that's all it is. Maybe that is all it is.
Hmm.
Maybe there's a God who likes that I'm doing that. And in some kind of mystical way, I have a relationship with God by loving myself and loving my neighbor. You know, Jesus said, when you love the poor, you know, you're doing it for me. You know, maybe there's something going on there. I don't literally know.
Wouldn't it make more sense if it just benefits humanity as a whole, as opposed to this invisible being out there somewhere that really enjoys it, but doesn't want to say anything?
Yeah, but I don't need to insert an invisible being to do that, and I don't need a reward of like the afterlife in order to make it worth it. Like, to me,
well, he doesn't even need to be there at all. Apparently,
no,
we can just be good to each other without him. Correct?
Yeah, we could.
So, what role does he really play?
The theoretical construct of God plays a role in that it's here whether we like it or not, because it's part of our DNA, as a topic of conversation.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of theories. You got the flat earth theory, for one. You know, people think that the earth is flat still to this day. So, I mean, doesn't make it, you know, accurate.
It doesn't make it real.
Worthwhile.
And I'm not going out of my way to try to prove that to you either.
No. I haven't heard that. I'm just very curious why you believe it. You seem to agree with a lot about the Bible and the character of that the Bible describes Yahweh as. You don't quite understand hell. How about heaven? Do you believe in heaven?
I would love for there to be a heaven, but I don't know. Again, and
A biblical heaven or Hollywood version of heaven?
No, I would. So let's say you die. I am the only version of Christianity that I would be interested in would be an afterlife where all of the disconnections from our own humanity and from our neighbors, like, they're able to be dealt with in some kind of a way, and we're able to be healed. And that would take time, especially with all the crap in the world, you know? Like, if there's something like that, I would love for that to be real, but I can't prove that.
Right. Just like wishful thinking. And I wish there was a great place my grandma and my family and my mom and my dad and my brothers and sisters would all be when I go away, you know, when we die. We could all be together and we're all young and happy and live eternally. No, man. I mean, that's great, but man, that's probably not what really happens. I mean, reality tells us otherwise.
Yeah, we have no idea. And so I'm going to be here today with my kids and my wife, and we're going to have a really great day. And I think that whatever happens or doesn't happen after I take my last breath should have no effect on whether I had a great day with my family today. And I hear a lot of Christians say, well, if there's no life after death, then what does this all mean? You know, then all of this is meaningless. And I'm like, well, No, it's not. I had a great day with my family.
Exactly. No, 100% agree with that.
Yeah. And if that, that's another point of disconnection. If you need an afterlife in order to have a good day with your family, then you're not seeing your family, and you've been disconnected from your family, and you've been disconnected from yourself. And so that's another part of traditional Christian theology that I think disconnects us from our humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree with you, man. They don't live in the now. They're worried about some future that they don't even know exists, but they have a hope for it. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, pay attention to your kids now, man. Good grief. All right. Well, this has been fun, man. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I appreciate the article, and appreciate your time and trying to nail down what God you believe in and during all my questions, man. I appreciate it. And stay safe out there. We'll keep in contact, and I'll let you know when this airs.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Talk to you.
That's all the podcast there is for you today. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard and want to help keep the recording light on, simply go to patreon.com/BSWthePodcast and sign up to be a supporter of the show. Your episodic tithes of a dollar or more will give you access to the patron feed, unaired conversations, early access to each episode, and much more. For the latest events, BSW swag, and a peek behind the scenes, head over to the show's ever-evolving webpage at thebiblesayswhat.com. Thanks to the cosmic powers of the internet, it is now possible to buy me a beer or coffee online. Simply go to buymeacoffee.com/BSWthePodcast and click the appropriate buttons. If you can't support the show monetarily, please like, share, and or leave a review. As always, you can find me at the Bible Says What Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or Instagram pages. You can also reach me at bswthepodcast@gmail.com. And no matter which platform you use to listen to your podcasts, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss out on the next episode. Until then, would you kindly pick up your Bibles and read them? No, you're fine. I'm going to get this. I'm going to do this. Damn it.
You can do it.
From in the... What?
Sorry. I said I believe.
Biggie.